Hey, everyone. Thank you all for listening. We here at Mangum Talks podcast channel wanted to provide a disclaimer before going forward with this podcast. Please do not listen to this podcast unless you are comfortable hearing about extremely disturbing and graphic content. The movie we are reviewing during this podcast, Megan is Missing, includes extremely graphic content, including sexual content, sexual violence, and imagery related to minors, violence, neglect, abuse, and rape. We believe the content within the film is serious, disturbing, and should in no way be taken lightly. The movie itself, however, the production, the acting, directing, cinematography, etc., does border on the absurd, and in our opinion, merits discussion and at times ridicule. Any laughter or joking we engage in during this podcast is directed at the film itself and does not indicate we take the content lightly. Oh, and we do not recommend anyone watch this movie, ever. Don't watch it. It's horrific. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mangum Watches. I am Lee. I'm here. I'm joined by BJ. BJ, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. And I got Spencer on the line. Spencer Pants, how are you?
I'm here.
And Levi?
Cheers.
Full house. Okay. We are doing something a little bit different today, as the disclaimer before this podcast indicated. We are reviewing a movie called Megan is Missing. This movie, it caught my attention because it got popular on TikTok with people like reviewing the movie and then providing like reaction shots, right? I've watched it. You fellas have watched it. I guess we're going to go into it, going to talk about it. I think we can start with a summary and then maybe talk about things we liked or didn't like. I don't know how we say liked, but maybe just things we particularly didn't like. And then we'll just have any other general discussion about it.
Maybe things that were interesting and where we were completely out on the movie.
It's also things you can like about the film and the filmmaking that are independent necessarily from the content that's being depicted.
Okay. All right. Well, then Spencer may have a like. All right, let's get started with just initial gut reactions. And within the gut reaction, so I want to hear, like, what was your experience watching the movie? And then also, if there was ever a pause or fast forward situation, did you engage in that, Spencer?
Near the end, there were actually a couple moments where I engaged in fast forwarding for different reasons. There was a preference at certain moments in this film to just hang on a shot for a lot longer than necessary. That I was just getting tired of, like an open door or a barrel near the end. Ooh, that were just going on for long periods. So it was like, I get it. There were also certain scenes of violence that were prolonged. Pretty much the last 30 minutes of this film is basically a snuff film that I didn't need or want to watch most of it. It just seemed gratuitous. And so there were times I was like, okay, let's just skip 10 seconds and see if this is the same thing. It is? Okay, let's keep going. So yeah, there were several moments that were just like, it wasn't that like I had to look away or whatever else. It was just unnecessary. It's like, I got the point. I understand where you're going with this. Let's move on. So particularly in the last almost third of the movie, that was happening more often than not.
Levi, what about you? Does it get your Emmy vote?
My Emmy vote? Unfortunately, the Academy hasn't given me the right to vote on that award.
Shame on me.
But no, I mean, it was a pretty rough movie to watch, to be honest. Now, I didn't fast forward because I am a completionist. I don't believe in such things. But there were parts where I decided to change the size of the screen because I was watching my laptop and then pull up another tab and browse other things. So I was a little distracted in parts of it because Spencer's part, it's the last 20 to 30 minutes, just a snuff movie, right? There's some cinematography look interesting. Like it really felt like you were in a dungeon. But otherwise it's a bit ridiculous.
I do want to point out that after Levi watched it, I got a text. Okay. That's a fucked up movie. Yep. Made me laugh. BJ, what'd you think?
I thought there were some interesting choices and how the movie was done. But a lot of the first third of the movie, I was really bored. And then the last part of the movie was like, yep, that's still gross. Yep, that's still gross. Skip ahead 10 seconds. All right, we're still on that shot. I know where it's going. I understand what's going on. I don't need to sit through 30 minutes of gruesome footage.
Okay, so it seems like I'm in the same boat. I think that the ending of it, like the last, like I would say 30 minutes is like a lot. So does anybody have a guess as to how much this movie cost to make?
According to Wikipedia, it was like $35,000. So shoestring.
Well, that really kills the bit, Spencer. Thank you.
You ask me a question. Unbelievable. Research information.
Would
I'm
anyone
going to
like
fill in
to
the blank.
Guess?
I was going to say, this felt lazier than Primer and a couple of other like really low budget movies. I mean, there were definitely a bunch of disclaimers associated with it. And on the page itself that is referenced, findmegan.com, is actually a real website and is about the movie. It was apparently filmed in 8 days.
Yeah, not surprising there. Yeah.
And all of the parents like read the scripts before their kids were a part of it.
Because it was a surprisingly underage cast.
Now, I heard that the parents, for certain scenes, the director required the parents to be on set.
Oh, yeah. That's not a surprise.
No, it's not. But I mean, you know, it's a, you know, I think it's a good move.
I have to give the film some kind of credit, though, for just being prescient. I hadn't realized how old it was. And this thing was filmed back in 2006. It's practically a prior generation ago.
2006? I thought it came out in 2010.
It came out in 2011. It was actually filmed years earlier and actually set in development hell as they were trying to find somebody that would actually release it.
Well, that's a fair conundrum.
This thing came out long before TikTok, Zoom, a lot of modern social media even existed, and was really pretty prescient in recognizing some at tapping into where that interest and where that similarity would lie long before it could even know it was coming.
This is based on like four or five different crimes that were committed and drew on a bunch of those, apparently.
Sure.
So,
yeah, I mean, like, so I'm going to say something positive about the movie. I think I know what the director was doing. I've listened to the director talk. I think he's a completely reasonable person. And it's a sort of, hey, kids, don't fuck around on the internet. There's like really serious consequences to doing so. And he wanted to drive that point home. And I think he did so repeatedly, probably gratuitously, obviously, as we talked about. But like, I think that the overall point of the movie is a good one in the sense that like, it's a good message to deliver to kids. And, you know, it caught on. I mean, kids are watching it, right? Like, so that's all these insane kids that are watching it on TikTok, like it's my hope. Maybe I'm a sweet summer child, but it's my hope that maybe like they watch it and they go, oh shit, maybe I shouldn't fuck around. You know?
End of November, this was one of the most streamed things in the world. That's how popular this got in terms of TikTok audience.
So maybe it plants a seed in some kids and they're a little bit more safe. I don't know. That's my hope.
You would describe it as kind of like one of those cautionary tales. Like, you guys remember from like when we did those driver's ed courses and they showed you like Blood on the Road and all those films about what happens if you know, drunk driver, stuff like that. This is the modern Zoom version of that.
This is that one to like a factor that's so high, like you need like E in the number.
We're going exponential.
That's how high it is.
I mean, so one of the things that like I'm trying to like figure out is, at what point are you okay with somebody you know watching this? Like, how old do they have to be? Like, what state of mind? Because like, there is, I mean, other than like you guys, and I'm not sure I would have even recommended it knowing what it was, having seen it, like somebody else watch it.
I take that personal. I
Theory.
Recommended the movie after I watched it. Go ahead, Spencer.
I have a theory that this has essentially been, for the newest generation, their equivalent, their much, in my mind, worse equivalent of like Two Girls, One Cup or Tub Girl or something like that. I think it's that shared experience of unpleasantness where you just pass around something that's vile for the purpose of experiencing something that's vile and enduring it, perhaps.
Well,
almost like a kind of shared hazing.
Well, but Spencer, do you think I'm just like, really sort of naive in this, but like so Two Girls, One Cup and like Tub Girl, that stuff was gross for the purpose of being gross. It was only gross. That was it. But this does at least deliver a message to be careful in certain situations. So I'm kind of hoping it's a little more than those things.
I'm distinguishing the intent versus the reasons that it's now being viewed. My impression is that the intent differs from the current, it's from the basis for its current popularity.
No, and that makes sense. But I guess what I'm suggesting is like, so my hope is that some of these kids are watching it for the exact reason you're talking about. Like it's like a dare, a challenge, and it's just like who can get through it. Mm-hmm. But maybe like somewhere in there it plants a seed that might be helpful someday.
I think there may be some subconscious element that's put in there. I think one of the problems with the film, though, is that while it's going for abject realism, it's going for dirty, gritty kind of realism in terms of its filming style and very amateur actors and things along those lines, because it's not very well done, it's hard in my mind to take it serious. And I think that's one of the problems it runs into, particularly with respect to the acting. We can go into greater detail about, you know, our comments on the film and production after we do a recap, if you want to do that. But there were very few times I took this as anything other than a film in a way that I don't think, I mean, way I think the film was hoping I would go farther with. I think it wanted me to take this seriously, to actually kind of view it as a found footage thing, to view it as, yeah, they're awkward, but it's because they're awkward because they're real people in real life. I never was able to bridge that gap. And I'm curious if we ever did like an audience poll, how many people were really in the moment viewing this as some kind of, in, you know, intense, engaging, I'm trapped in this experience with them kind of thing, or just something that was almost absurdist.
So I think that there's a slight disconnect, maybe, because I definitely felt similarly, between people that don't have a, I'm taking video of myself online presence, and that they might connect to this more, because that's kind of a lot of what this is.
And I'm with you. This felt very targeted at that, at the particular age group of its characters and the particular media presence of its characters, which is really weird in what amounts to a hard R film.
It's more than an R, right? I mean, this is like NC-26, right? So I want to get back to your question, though, about who would ever recommend this movie? Like Levi, that question, is there any situation other than like, hey, like you're fucking around with your friends and want to do a podcast, you would ever recommend this movie?
No, but I guess I'm sort of on the opposite end of the spectrum than you guys, in the sense that it's so heavy-handed about a message that I don't think is that big of a problem. Like fucking around online, as you described, is not that big of a deal. I don't see that as being a big scourge out there in the world and a big risk for people to take part in, that I don't even see the fundamental message of the movie to be that interesting, or that moving or impactful to me. But also it's just like, it's a snuff film. So I'm not going to just like bring that up in casual conversation, post COVID, when we have, you know, dinner parties and people over, we're not exactly going to just say, hey, so I just recently watched a snuff film. It's not going to move the conversation.
Thank you for joining me down in Key West.
I do think young kids, like, you know, interacting with people they shouldn't online is still like a problem. I don't think that's like a 2005 problem. I think it's still a 2020 problem, but maybe to a lesser extent.
I mean, I guess it comes down to size, right? I mean, are people abducted by strangers? Yes. Is it that big of a risk relative to anything else in the world? Not really, right?
I mean, I think the first third of the movie, like, is in some ways the worst part.
I'm actually going to fight you on that later on, BJ.
Not like the worst part to like deal with, too. But like the bigger cautionary tale.
Yeah, I mean, the parties with like it was unclear how old the people were.
I think like we're meant to believe the boys are older, right?
Yeah, they definitely are older actors. I don't know if it's clearly set up that the main antagonist, that the sort of serial killer abductor guy, that he doesn't actually go to high school, so presumably he's older. But the other guys there seem a bit older. Those are the real folks the real villains.
I thought that was the more, you know, effective Saturday evening special. What's the term to refer to that? The kind of cautionary tale to kids? Because
The more we know, or like scared straight, or like whatever it is, yeah.
But several of the boys were referred to, I think, or a couple of them were referred to as being 17. So yeah, they were meant to be
like distinctly freshman, older, senior gap or whatever. Yeah.
So that, should we talk about, go ahead, Spencer, sorry.
No, I was going to disagree with Levi. I think that was honestly the more effective part of the film, because that was much more real life kind of experience that most of these people would actually be going through.
Okay. All right. Do we want to jump into I'm going to do a recap, but like not like, you know, super detailed.
please.
All right. Well, so first off, the movie is, I'm interested in you guys' take on how the movie is filmed. Like it's some cross between like found footage and like, I guess like some news reports and like people's cell phones and webcams. So it's not like a traditional movie. It's kind of like mashed up in the vein of like a Blair Witch Project. Was that effective for anyone, or was it just kind of blah?
So I actually thought that the like web calling was done way better, way earlier than basically any other piece of media did that. It took forever to people to figure out how to do texts, how to do stuff like that in a media context. And I think that worked surprisingly well for me. But yeah, oh my God, the news segments.
Yeah, those are rough. Yeah,
the news ones were silly looking. They were possibly the worst ones, but the found footage angle, 10 out of 10. I love found footage movies. They're fantastic.
Levi and I are on the same page there.
And Lee, I'll agree too. This was kind of a unique spin on the found footage because it was a found footage that had already been compiled into a documentary. It was the kind of style right. they were going with it, of where mm-hmm. they were clearly meant to be like someone has edited and pieced this together to form a coherent tale from the separate pieces.
Now,
that's good. You put it a lot better than I did, Spencer. That's exactly right. It's not just found footage. It's more like found footage that somebody like edited, you know, and put together and all that to tell the story. Go ahead, Levi.
I will say the found footage angle, of course, was interesting, right? Just intrinsically, it required you to take the largest leap of faith ever, right? I mean, all this footage is saved somewhere yeah. in the cloud, quote unquote, and just compiled. That's absolutely ridiculous.
It's pretty absurd.
But even with that premise, like, I don't care. Like, found footage to me is just that's. It's such a visceral way to scare you that it's fantastic. Yep. Love it.
I agree. Like the scariest movie I think I've ever watched is what's that one? Paranormal Activity 1.
Yep.
Sure.
I'm not ashamed to say, like, I went home and like slept with my light on. I was living alone, but I slept with my light on that night. And I'm not like one of those guys that really gets scared at movies, but that one got me. And I'm with Levi. I love found footage. So I was in on this movie like initially because of how it was put together. Sorry, Spencer, go ahead.
No. I was actually going to just note, you're not alone. Paranormal Activity is actually dollar for dollar the most successful film of all time in terms of cost to make it versus what it brought into the box office.
Spencer, since you're like, you've got some stuff pulled up, do you know how much Megan is Missing made? I mean, I know that like now it's making a lot of money, like streaming and stuff, but like initially, is it on like Box Office Mojo or something like that?
I can check. There was nothing on Wikipedia with respect to it.
I was going to say, I don't think it was released in theaters, so...
Right, but I imagine they have a number of like, okay, first run, it first hit the, you know, the internet, how much did it make streaming or whatever? I mean, now it's probably making a barrel load, but
nothing's coming up. I think it was too limited of a run for them to keep really track. But similar to what you said, BJ, I really agree that some aspects of the found footage were more successful than others. I think everything that was on like a Zoom call was probably the most effective part of the film. I think they did that very well. It's done it better than films that have been trying to do it more recently that I've seen. I thought the actual found footage was kind of weak. Whenever it was like the camera at the very end, I thought that was the acting became more apparent there than it was.
Yeah.
Wasn't that good?
That's a good point, Spencer. I feel because, you know, there's two young girls who star in the movie. One is named Megan. This is the character's name, Megan Stewart. The other, Amy Herman. Megan is obviously the central character and Amy is her good friend. Mm-hmm. I felt like their acting, the best acting either one of those young girls did was in front of the webcam, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then talking to each other.
Yeah, one thing I was telling Levi before we get on, the actress that plays Megan, I got her name here. It is Rachel Quinn. Her first big role. Big relative, you know. I thought she actually did pretty well. I thought most of the acting was kind of crap, but I thought she did well in a way that she also improved the people that were with her. When she was in the scene, even people who later weren't doing that great, they seemed to work well off her. And so her addition, the early part of the film, I thought improved it and got almost kind of invested in her character a bit. And I thought that was a kind of precipitous drop off once she left.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get started. So the recap. Basically, you have Megan and Amy, who are friends. We find out that so the way it's shot is, you know, they have conversations, but then also through the webcam, you see things going on in the home that gives you an idea about what, you know, kind of these girls are dealing with. And Megan obviously has a history of abuse. I mean, I'm looking at the recap and it says child sexual abuse. I don't know how. I mean, it shows abuse, obviously. I don't know you guys read that initially as child sexual abuse.
Well, she says that her dad raped her from nine
her stepdad raped her
to 11
for two years, and then her mom blamed her for like splitting up the family and him getting sent to prison.
So you're talking about the conversation. I'm talking about like what you see in the background, indicate like what her interactions with her mother and stuff.
It is discussed by Megan in terms of events that have happened in her past, similar to the thing that happened when she was 10 at camp. She's had a rough road of a life coming to the present moment.
Yeah, and I mean, they drive that point home and it's, you know, very different than what she's kind of portraying out there. But anyway, we get to Amy's upcoming 14th birthday. They go to a party. And this is the scenes, I think, that you guys were talking about that was maybe even a better cautionary tale for young girls, right? Going to parties, getting drunk and engaging in sexual activity. I think that the indication there is that Amy is physically assaulted. We find out that Amy walks in on Megan, I guess, blowing a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Spencer.
With an indication being that this is the kind of party of where that's expected. It's almost your entrance. That was literally the entrance fee for certain characters.
Well, that and like a lot of previous stuff is basically trading sexual favors for drugs. Is yep. like
yeah.
you know, half of the Zoom or the web calls that Megan has with other people other than Amy. So Amy is basically this very straight-laced
yep.
sort of it's a real neighborhood in LA, but
Shepherd Oaks, right? Something like mm-hmm. that?
Sherman Oaks, I think.
Sherman Oaks.
And Sherman so Oaks, lives yeah. a very like upper middle class, you know, somewhere in their life. Whereas Megan is definitely a little like doesn't have a lot of the same benefits that Amy does, but they sort of have a fairly long friendship going.
Despite being in very different social groups.
And Megan doesn't like Megan's dad's not around, right? Like he's gone.
He's gone for years, and the stepdad's now in prison for previously described acts.
Yeah, for yep. rape and her, yeah.
I'm curious.
And we see like a very fractious relationship between her and her mom.
Yeah, her mom's emotionally abusive, I think it'd be an easy description for our.
Yeah, you have these moments where like, there's that one moment, I guess. It's like the movies where you know it's a horror movie and you get the initial like, woo, jump out at you. But it's kind of like innocuous. We got that scene, right? When they were talking and then like the mom came in and was like, who are you talking to? Yeah. It was like the first sort of like around the corner scare, although it's yeah. sort of innocuous, but it showed that the mom was kind of like, you know.
And I think it was at that point that like we get the mom destroying one of her game systems or something.
Hmm? I think they literally referred to it as a game box. Like they couldn't afford the licensing to actually refer to a product by name.
But yeah. that surprised me because I was like, this movie is so cheap. Like did they, I would assume they would not give a shit and just say Xbox.
I mean, I think they were so cheap. They were lazy about using like St. Pauli girl beers or whatever.
Yeah.
yeah.
I'll go ahead.
I'm curious to ask. One of the key things that sets up the relationship that Megan and Amy share is that they're in decidedly different social groups, like you guys said, that Amy is studious, upright. I think they even referred to her as a church girl at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Megan is much more the traditional popular girl in high school. She's out there. She's going to events. She's social. She parties. She's loose in a variety of ways.
Ooh.
Did you guys have, I'm curious when you guys were in high, I guess this won't speed. These girls be late middle school or early high school?
Uh-oh, Spencer's asking about our own high school experience.
Well, I'm asking purely about, did you guys have a friend that was decidedly outside of your social circle or of a different level of standing when you were back in high school or middle school?
Standing, that's very formal, but yeah.
And I was that with my friend group. I hung out with a bunch of dudes. Like I was like, in my friend group, I was the only dude that was like in honors and AP classes. That went to like family went to church and stuff. Like my friend group was like some dudes who like barely graduated, some dudes who did not graduate from high school. So yeah, I was a little bit that with my male group.
Okay, it's a common trope. I'm always curious to see how common it is for people in real life.
I mean, the easiest way for this to happen, right, is play sports, right? Sports sure. are an equalizer that allows you to be introduced to people and sort of forced to interact because, at least I think with a lot of us, the way we went to school and who knows if that's still the case, right, there are honors classes. So you have very limited interaction with people who aren't in honors classes per se or AP tracks or IB tracks. But, you know, sports, generally being an affable person like Terry, or like music, you know, being in band or being in a band, those are common ways to expose that. But yes, what about you, Spencer? I'm curious. I can't imagine there was a lot of variability in your friend group.
Yes and no. My friend group was mostly, you know, nerds, as one should not be too surprised about. But I was never really picked on by anybody, and I was kind of like cross-cutting in that I was kind of friendly with everybody, and people liked me. I was voted like most likable guy in school.
That's a surprise.
You were?
Nice. Yeah.
So it was like one of those things of where I didn't even realize that people liked me outside my social group just because I was just pretty antisocial, period.
Did anybody else get a superlative?
Did anybody else get that superlative? Or
I think he's talking about us. I don't
know. Oh, sorry.
I think I got most likely to succeed or something to that effect. It was some sort of like positive one. I don't really remember.
Best all around right here, fellas. Whoa.
Well done.
Not surprising.
Still bragging 20 years later.
I don't think I got any superlatives, but also like I was reasonably well liked in high school, mostly because the conflict that I had, pretty much every conflict that I had in high school was with a teacher. And I just mouthed off the teachers.
Not surprised by that at all. Does not surprise me.
So, yeah, I was reasonably well liked by pretty much everybody because I don't know. I was a little shit in high school, but not to other people.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's a good point, Spencer, right? Like Amy is, I think, a little bit out of the, what you would assume the social circle that Megan would have. I do want to point out like a scene that like made me laugh, like genuinely laugh, is when they were, Megan and Amy were talking and Megan was describing performing oral sex on this dude.
The dude at the party?
No, yeah, just in general.
Her explanation of it to me made me laugh.
Mm. Now, I think the relationship, like, sorry.
Well, just the thing about the teeth. I don't know if that made anybody else laugh.
I was like I didn't have anywhere else to put my teeth.
Yeah. She's like, where else was I going to put my teeth?
That wasn't at the party though.
That was the camp counselor.
Yeah.
Still a funny moment.
Now, the two of them have some, you know, what would be, if they were just really written on paper, some pretty vile conversations, but they have a good banter with each other. It doesn't feel very forced that the two of them are friends and they're able to talk about anything with each other.
Yeah,
and
I was going to say, really what I was trying to point out is that there are some funny moments when they're talking.
Yeah, that's the only friendship that didn't seem like it was written mm-hmm. poorly, and every other like interaction felt like it was written by somebody that didn't know like how girls this age would interact. It felt like these two actresses had some input on their dialogue mm-hmm. and like at least maybe practiced it a little bit more or something else. I just, you know, every single other actress that it just felt stilted for the rest of the time.
Well, yeah, I very much agree. And kind of returning back to Lee's point, if there's an effective cautionary tale in this story, it's trusting boys under the age of 17.
Yeah, well, absolutely. That should have been in the disclaimer at the top. Never do that.
Never trust teenage boys.
No.
Also, I probably was just completely unaware in my high school because I moved between a Jewish day school and public school, basically between middle school and high school. So, like, I was in high school basically not knowing anybody, and I had some friends there, but like it wasn't people that I would end up keeping in touch with pretty much, and so like I'm sure there was a lot of shit going on that I had no idea about, but like I know that there was a lot of alcohol and weed use, but nothing particularly harder, or at least to my knowledge. And yeah, I went to a fairly large high school, and I feel like that was like a big thing that was just like, that's pretty crazy to me that this freshman in high school is blowing a guy for an unnamed white powder.
Yeah, we had different high school experiences. That was not surprising to me.
Yeah, it's not common, but BJ, I'm with Terry. That's a limit of your exposure. Now, I will say that as a person who didn't believe bullying existed outside of TV or film until I was in college.
That means you're the bully. That means you're the bully is what that means, Levi.
So how many people did you give swirlies, Levi?
No. I was like, nobody bullies me. I don't know. Well, Levi, you were 6 foot tall when you were in fourth grade. Scared the hell out of everybody. Scared me. But BJ, to your point, I did experience like the stuff about drugs and the really sketchy sexual stuff. Like that kind of resonated with me about my high school experience. Like, I mean, I went to parties where like, you know, bad things were happening, and like, you know, it was just tough. Having to deal with it at like 15, 16, and like when do you step in? When do you not? And stuff like that. It did connect with me a little bit on high school experience. Spencer, I think you were going to jump in.
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree with BJ that it was not at all my experience of either high school or middle school, because even if I knew those parties would have existed, I would have never, ever gone for any reason whatsoever. But I knew that it was I heard enough that it was going on, and I've known from other people that was very much their own experience. And so I feel like that was another thing that's kind of to the credit to the first half of this film, is showing how mature, relatively speaking, or how much more mature than we would think they are, young teenagers can be in terms of the activities that they engage in. I think it's in a way that adults either have forgotten or always is directly aware of.
Okay.
Because some critics were like, oh, this is far too old behavior. This is unrealistically old behavior for mm-hmm. children. And a lot of the comments were going, the fact you referred to them as children, the fact you think that is a reason that this film probably should exist.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I mean, I think BJ's point of like, I think the example you gave was like, you know, some girl engaging in sexual activity for drugs, like when she was a freshman in high school, like that's not, certainly not out the realm of some of the things that you know, I saw kind of swirling around me. But again, like in my high school, like group, like, I mean, I hung out with a lot of folks that like Vivo, someone I never would have normally interacted with. These were people who were certainly not honors track. A lot of them didn't go to school all the time. But I still had some exposure to them. Anything else on, I don't know. I don't know how to fuck to do the recap with this, but I was thinking about jumping to Megan being introduced to Josh. I was thinking about Megan being need introduced to Josh. Am I jumping too far ahead?
Well, just one point to reference as well is that another thing I find interesting about Megan and Amy's relationship is that Megan's always the one that's making sure that Amy's included, not necessarily for Amy's benefit, but also seemingly for her own.
Yeah.
Is that it seems like she's using Amy as a lifeline or a touchstone separate from the world she doesn't actually want to be in. And that Amy more reflects the world that she would actually prefer to be in, but has so much social or societal pressure that she can't as openly express that, maybe, at least to other people.
And I did also, some of that. I had friends that, like, I would just be like, get in the car, come on, we're going. And, like, they didn't have, like, a big social circle. I was, like, exposing them to that. And, like, if I'm being honest, a lot of that was, like, I just wanted a buddy.
Yeah.
Go ahead, BJ.
I was going to say, also, it felt like she was using Amy kind of as a metric of, like, I think she realizes how messed up some of the things are, but doesn't have
the line here?
There.
Is the line here? Amy, help me.
Yeah.
There was some of that.
Okay. Well, we get a lot of intro with respect to that in terms of setting up that how Amy's going to spend her birthday party. Is it going to be going to this kind of massive debaucherous
kind of like
event?
Yeah.
Very much a rave. Is she going to spend it going to, I think her dad suggests going to like a little arcade to hang out with like Chuck E. Cheese kind of characters.
Man, if only she'd have gone.
If only she'd gone. But she goes through that. It's a very unpleasant experience. And then we see several moments of bonding between her and Megan. But like you said, where the film goes from what is a cautionary childhood tale or a tale about growing up and the experience of, you know, going through adolescence, it then starts to go in a different direction of when one of her friends introduces Megan to Josh.
Lexi, yeah. And his webcam's broke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But because his little brother did it, but then his dog did it.
Yeah,
it was sketchy.
Like his story like completely doesn't add up. And it's like I 100% get that people aren't like rational and like looking out for what's going on, but it's also just like sirens going off, red flags everywhere. It's just like, all right.
Yeah. Now, maybe this was a particularly appalling example from my personal history, but that part to me, yes, there are red flags everywhere, but it seemed reasonable that people would just go with the flow. And the story I would tell there, right, is when I was in junior in high school, I was like trying to just waste time for something. I had to pick my sister up from like softball practice or something. So I was just rolling around and I was driving through one of the sort of mall area in my hometown, and you know, going very slow, a lot of speed bumps. And I think I may have like pulled to the side to like do something. And some guy sort of came up, and asked if I was a friend of some person. And I was like, yeah, I know, play football with him. And then he was like, I'm a good friend of him as well. You know, I need to get over to some apartment I'm staying in. And I ended up getting him in the car, and he was clearly going to try to rob me. He was trying to get me to pull into behind mm-hmm. the apartment complex. And it, to one point, he was grabbing the steering wheel, and I just sort of like shoved him out. Now I'm a bigger person, right? I was 6 foot two, you know, in the twos at that point. I was a fairly big kid, so I could just push him out. But like in retrospect, that's a really stupid scenario. I just gave someone a ride, yeah. Right? So at least from my personal experience, I mean, kids are stupid. They don't foresee those things. But it is sort of hilarious as an adult to see that and say, what are we really doing here, guy?
That's Levi's point. I had moments like that. Like, I mean, I remember being at parties where like people would drug overdose and we would all have to do the math of like, all right, what do we do here? Do we keep partying? Do we call? Like, I mean, you know, like really sketchy, shitty behavior. And so it's like a lot of this stuff doesn't really, the lead up anyway, doesn't really surprise me. Go ahead, Spencer.
It's definitely a relative experience thing that's going on here. I absolutely agree that, you know, as an adult, we can look back at this and say, God, you're a moron. At the time, we all did that kind of shit in varying degrees. Here, though, it's particularly insidious, though, because there's an element of a friend already vetting him. Mm-hmm. That she didn't just find this guy. He didn't contact her out of the blue. A friend said he was cool and acted like she'd met him, maybe. And said,
Sorry. Do you think, how much do you think that that really happened with Lexi? Do you think she even fucking knew who this guy was, or was she bullshitting?
I don't know. I think she probably spoke to him once or twice online or something.
That was also Lexi being the bad friend to fucking everybody. Like, Lexi, oh man.
She's the mean girl.
But I was going to say, like, freshman year of college, I basically was hanging out with a roommate and some of his friends, and his friends were way more insane than I ever expected. This friend, like, I knew that he had, he like raced cars in his off time, and he had like a picture of a car that he was fixing up, like, very different person, than my crowd that I would have hung out with in high school and before. And I just remember, I don't remember even where we were going, we're probably like going out to like get a meal somewhere. And we're on a highway in New Jersey going somewhere between like 95 and 105, weaving in and out of traffic. And I was just like, I know I'm basically the only person in this car with the seatbelt on. And they kind of looked at me weird when I did that, but I might die here. And this is insane. Like, how on earth did I get into this? Like, I assume my roommate was a reasonable person, and what on earth is going here? Honestly, Spencer, I feel like that's how you felt with us.
Yeah, at times. I was with a dude who stole a car one time, and I remember being like, shit, I'm in a stolen car. That wasn't good. So to Spencer's point, it's a relative experience, how much you identify with what's going on here. But I do think that some of this stuff kind of borders on the absurd. And then you have some, with the recap, you had this situation where I guess Josh doesn't show up for like a party, and Megan's really pissed about that.
He slow plays it pretty effectively.
Yeah, he says he's like shy and shit.
And he comes across as endearing. He comes across in a way that he's getting her to lower whatever further guards or boundaries she has, because he's harmless. He's shy. He saw her and was afraid to approach her.
Intimidated by how cool she is.
Yes. Just to further get her to lower her guards so that he can arrange a private meeting, which is what he actually wants. And so after she spends the last evening going to see a Matt Damon film, I think it is, with Amy. She goes to
Damon, still relevant. Look at that, timeless.
Good call.
Probably didn't have the money to name drop the movie either.
Yeah, it's Born Identity, guys. Everybody, it's Born Identity.
Also, I like apparently in the city of Los Angeles, he can just refer to "Let's meet behind the diner," and she immediately knows what diner to go behind and meet. It's like, oh yeah, I'm in the creek behind that diner. It's like, oh, I know that diner. How? What? This isn't a town of 10,000 people. What are you doing?
Any diner would have sued them to.
Yes, that's the issue, really.
Yeah, Megan, go behind Chuck's diner. Chuck's diner's like, what the fuck?
But she goes behind the diner. She's never seen again.
Nope, she goes missing.
Amy actually starts to do a little of her own investigation first in terms of calling all the friends and even calling Josh to find out.
Sees her get abducted too, right?
That's she calls the police after no one's heard of her, arranges that, and then the police, like a couple days later, pull the security cam footage and find an abduction in progress, which we get three zooms of. What'd you think of that design choice of where we spent about 3 minutes zooming in on that shot?
It seemed like a crack against NCIS or whatever, where they always zoom in and have like such great views, but it was a little bit like, what are we trying to show here?
I guess what they're trying to show is zoom in on her face to show her reaction that, no, she wasn't going voluntarily with him. She was horrified in all grainy 8-bit that we could actually tell. But it's a good call, BJ. I feel like several of these moments almost feel like satirical commentary on things the director is just annoyed by. It's like that, all that zooming in. And then all of the news footage we get next, which is so either intentionally bad or just surreal.
Yeah, and then we do we want to get to the point, like, so this is the point where it gets really sad with everybody, so if you're listening, you don't want to hear horrific shit, just turn it off. Then we get to the photos. Spencer, you want to talk about the photos?
I'll talk about the photos. As Amy continues to investigate this, she, even though she's turned this over to the police, and even though the police are doing it, she's doing her own efforts to continue to stay in contact with Josh, because she assumes Josh is responsible, which leads to...
Good hunch.
What was intended to be a rather intimidating call of Josh being a dick to her and kind of sort of threatening her, which doesn't work, because the actor who plays Josh is probably the worst actor in the entire film.
Terrible.
He's absolutely terrible. None of his lines are believable. They're stilted as all hell. He can barely make it through a sentence. But That's the purpose of that scene. And it leads to afterwards, because she, you know, threatened Josh and the police are after him, that he feels the need to, I guess, escalate things or at least send a message before he posts pictures on what are said to be a fetish site of
Megan.
Megan in no small amount of uncomfortable distress.
Yeah. Yeah, she's in like a torture
the
device.
Stocks, kind of.
Yes.
Yeah, she's in stocks, the torture device, something that's pulling her cheeks and teeth back. And obviously the actress does like do a little bit of eye acting. She looks real terrible. Like that, I think the photos are really impactful in the movie. It's a turning point in the movie, because when you see him and you see her eyes, it's like, oh fuck. And that's like part of the reaction shot on TikTok, is like they do like a time lapse of people watching it.
Yeah.
That's like the most popular. And then like the photo shot is like boom, photos, and then bam, turn the reaction camera on for the reaction.
I very much agree. I think the photos were effective in a way that none of the found footage thereafter was. And if I was editing that, I'd almost encourage the director, hey, you hit something good with this scene. Do more of that later instead of all of this other gratuitous shit that you do. Less is more. Build the tension.
And then, you know.
Levi disagrees. Actually, Levi disagrees.
Yeah.
Levi, what'd you say?
Photos didn't scare you?
And the photos were absolutely horrifying, right? I mean, she did a great job acting in seeming terrified, horrific pose, dingy environment. I mean, it's very visceral how horrific the environment is. You can't come back to that multiple times, right? Like having multiple of those photos would reduce the impact, and it would just be even more of a snuff film, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, but to Spencer's point, I think that you could edit 20 of the last 25 minutes and get scenes that were like found footage and horrifying, but not something that you just never need to see.
Well, it's kind of referencing what Lee said with respect to the actress's eyes and those pictures. It's her eyes that are almost the more effective thing than everything else. It's the reaction of the character that affects how we're actually perceiving the scene more than necessarily is even what's being done to her. What's done to her quickly gets excessive, quickly gets gratuitous. It's the reactions of the characters that, if we care, that affect us.
Yeah.
And so you could almost just cut out a lot of the shit of what he's actually doing her and just focus on how the character's going through that. And we'd get it. It'd be more impactful rather than just all of us just being squeamish.
But I do have some sympathy for director, because I think that the way that he's shooting it, a lot of the scenes, it's not really possible to get like a big reaction shot from the actresses and or the actress. And also, you know, I don't think that the actress who plays Amy is particularly good. No. So, you know, he can't really rely on that. So like a lot of the stuff going on with the with the recap, Amy gets abducted and a lot of bad shit happens to her. And we could talk about some of that stuff, but I think like for you guys' point, it did get a little excessive, but I think that's the point. Like listening to the director talk, he's like that the point is to show, you know, exactly how bad it can get with, you know, some of these like fuckheads. Any of the scenes with Amy and Josh, anything we want to talk about, anything jump out as particularly disturbing to any of you guys? Or is it all just sort of snuff?
Really want to... And
well, like, I mean, I know that it's all, so here's my question. I know that it's all horrific and described it as a snuff film. Is there any individual point you want to talk about?
I thought it went on too long, but the just filmmaking of the shot of him, you know, digging the hole to bury the barrel in, I thought was a good idea. I thought it was a creative bit of filmmaking to kind of set that scene off and do that kind of purposely disassociated conversations tied to that.
Yeah.
It went on way too long.
Way too long.
Again, the actress I didn't think could sell it well enough. That's a scene of where the actress makes that scene entirely. She has to be believable. Her acting has to work to sell it, because she's the only one that's speaking. She's the only one that's interacting with us as an audience purposefully. And so the fact it went on too damn long, and the fact that her acting didn't make it perfectly believable, it wasn't as successful a scene as it could have been. But I'll give him credit that it was at least a clever idea.
Yep. So Spencer's talking about when toward the very end of the sequence, Josh comes in and he's raped her and he's made her eat dog food. That was a pretty tough one.
He stuck her in the barrel with her friend.
Well, then that's what I'm talking about. He comes in and he says, you know, like, okay, yeah, I'm going to take you back to your family, but I don't want you to know where I live. So you got to get in this barrel. That's another shot. Like,
sure.
You look in the barrel and you see Megan. Megan is obviously dead and decomposing in the barrel. That's a tough one for me.
It's horrific.
I raised my hand here. Kind of scared me a little bit.
Question about that whole the last part of the basically the whole last scene. So he puts her into a barrel with her friend who's decomposing. They I presume get in a vehicle, maybe a van, maybe a truck. They go out to some,
probably a van. You wouldn't want an open door thing with her screaming.
More rural area. And
just saying,
what does he roll the barrel? Does he carry it? That's a pretty
it
big
sounds
barrel.
Like he's dragging it, which is kind of silly.
We know
or
their
maybe
weights.
If he rolls it, that's tough.
We know their weights from the ending posters. They're 210 pounds combined, not counting barrel.
So Spencer, you're a psychopath. I'm gonna be honest.
It was in the last posters.
That's rough. That's the rolling would be very terrible. I agree with Spencer though that like I thought that he takes the barrel that he's got the girl in. And the dead girl, and then he goes and he buries it and he leaves her. That's the plot. Yeah. Now, I thought that the digging went on way too long, to Spencer's point. As he was talking, I was touching my watch, I was trying to indicate to him, yeah, I agree. A fucking really long time. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there was a missed opportunity, to Spencer's point. Like, if she would have done a little bit more voice acting with the, you know, oh God, please let me out. Yeah. That stuff.
Her desperate monologue of sorts to try to convince him otherwise to do it. And also talking with her friend too. A lot of that could have been really impactful and work out. If they had just, again, I think the main advice I'd give him as editor is that less is more. Use a bit of discretion, speed it along. The audience will be with you, almost more effectively with you if you don't bombard them with it.
And I think that's
Go ahead, BJ.
To the point where we got almost half an hour of just hammering something in that I think really could have just used the lighter touch. And it was just like he had this thing that he wanted to do and show you the horrors of it. But, and relating this to the last one we watched, that with the mist, it's like it was scary until like all of the things came out of the mist. And then it was just like, all right, that's a lot of stuff.
Right.
Where this, I think that there were some good ideas, but like showing every gory detail is just like, all right, well, this is just gross. I get it.
It's kind of that Game of Thrones scene. Like, if you think this has a happy ending, you're not like, it's like, if you think there's a lighter touch to be had with this filmmaker, like not happening. And like, even listening to the guy talk, like, I mean, he's made other movies too. He's like, there's no lighter touch. Like for him, it's like, yeah, I drove it home for 30 minutes. That was the fucking point, which I mean, I totally fair criticism.
I listened to this with like, I mean, not noise canceling, but like earbuds that like completely sealed, and like the sound work was super unpleasant.
Yeah. I tell you, I had AirPods in when I watched it, and I took one out. And then also when we got to the dog bowl scene, I minimized it on my screen, so I wasn't even watching the whole thing. Hmm. Like it got me, you know, it impacted me. I was not very comfortable. I had to take evasive measures.
Yeah, the scene after that was just like, who sat and did the sound work for that? That just seems like the worst possible job.
You mean the rape scene or which scene?
Yeah, the rape scene.
I mean any of them. Man.
Yeah, rape scene has some sound effects going on in it that just didn't necessarily need to occur. But
I'm glad I didn't catch that. All I got was the screaming. Oh, good, good. All right, yeah, all right.
Well, you need to watch that scene again. No, I think I'm good. There's a lot of stuff that you missed.
I think I'm okay. I'm okay. I had one AirPod in, volume was down, I'd minimize the screen.
Good so, call.
All good. Call. All good.
Lee's recommendations for experiencing key moments in this film.
I also watched a lot of it on my phone in the early parts, and I wasn't like half paying attention. That's why like some of like the details about like, well, she was talking about blowing a guy. I wasn't quite sure who she was blowing. I'll finish the recap and then we can just open it back up. It does end, I thought, with something that was really, really sad, right? Like the shot, the two girls talking, that really was really, really sad.
Yeah.
Even though the movie's absurd at points, like that part. You know,
it said the thing I found most believable was the relationship the two of them shared. So it was a sad ending to the film that again, felt like a believable exit. We could have gotten to there about 10 minutes earlier and I would have probably been more invested in the film.
Yeah.
And then the setup and the framing for all of this is that for some reason, Josh was filming all of this.
Yeah.
And disposed of the camera in a national park, I guess, outside of LA somewhere, in a way that has now been found. And they've been able to, through this, edit for the first time anyone's seen into the rest of the other material that was previously available.
Did enjoy the just abundance of message boards and websites. Is this real? Did this really happen? Yeah, like, I mean, No. I mean, it's based on, as BJ pointed out, it's based on like loosely different stories. Something similar happened, but of course this is complete fiction.
It is always fascinating to see whenever something like this comes out, so many people assume it's real, or so many people assume that it is actually a real documentary rather than purely just a movie. That's not limited to, you know, found footage or horror films, but it seems there's a higher percentage of that because the film kind of sort of wants you to believe that. It's part of its intent. It's part of its success.
I was that asshole in high school. I was that asshole in high school telling everybody Blair Witch was real.
You were the dick. There was every class.
I was like, dude, this is real. It's so real. Like, look, it even talks about the specific police department. Like,
and people believed you, didn't they?
A lot of people. A whole lot of people in that school thought Blair Witch was real.
Did you go with that with Cloverfield?
I think I was in high college with Cloverfield hit.
Yeah, we were too old.
I don't think I could have convinced you guys.
Yeah, right, New York, totally not there anymore. New York got carpet bombed last
week. Yeah, it's all true. Yeah, they're coming for us next. Levi, 1 to 10. What do you give the movie?
First half, I'd say a 6 out of 10. Last half, 1 out of 10.
1 out of 10. Woo. Oof da, Spencer.
I divide it into thirds. It's thirds, but they're not the same length. The first half, I think, is a first half. Pretty much up to the moment that Megan gets taken is kind of its own film. And I would give that 6.5, maybe even verging on a 7 at certain times. It's got some bad scenes. It's got some real bad scenes. But it has successes. It has things that work. And again, I thought the actress that played Megan was pretty convincing. And she's carrying that first half of the film. Next, like, quarter is the investigation scenes of when Amy's trying to hunt it down. It's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. That's like a 3 at best, just because the acting becomes much more apparent how bad some of the acting is. Like, also from like Megan's friends, like when they confront Amy when she's walking around the street. Remember that scene?
That was so rough. they start yelling at her. You're not her friend. You caused this. But the worst actors of the group. It was fantastic.
It seems like that where I really wonder, was there a script or were there just stage directions for some of these scenes? Do you just kind of tell people, I want you to be angry at this person and just go with it? We'll film it like 8 times and see what happens.
So I listened to the director and he did allow some improv from the actresses. So it's not always scripted.
And then maybe
that contributed negatively. I don't know.
And then the last quarter, which is the snuff film, 1.5. Like you said, the last scene deserves is heartfelt in a way that isn't ultimately earned. And then there was some filmmaking that could have been done better, but had potential. But the overall, if that's like encapsulating the overall intent of the movie, it's an abject failure.
You're such a better film critic than I am. BJ, go ahead. 1 to 10.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think breaking this thing up, is reasonable. I would break up things a little bit differently because I think that most of the video calls worked well and surprisingly well. I'd go towards like an 8 out of 10 for that, just because, I mean, some of the acting was bad, but like, it's to say this was a shoestring budget kind of says bad things about shoestrings.
Yeah, $35,000 is really low for a movie.
Yeah, and so that, I think the director and sort of everybody involved did an incredibly good job there. I think the party just didn't work for me. I mean, that was sort of like a 3 out of 10. Like, I think there were some good things in it in terms of what he was trying to do, but it just, it didn't work. And the video diary was a little rough, but I think that worked better for me than other people, just because it wasn't believable. But if you've ever filmed yourself doing something weird like that, it doesn't seem believable to me. So I guess the like weird nature of it and how like weird it came across was kind of about what I would expect from somebody that age kind of doing a video diary of herself. The news, if it was going for a comedy,
tough.
It was terrible, but it was almost bad enough to be good. But that's not what this movie was at all. So it's hard to like have it mesh with everything else, and it just seemed a little goofy.
Yeah.
And then the snuff was, I think I'd It's like if it was edited differently, I would have felt very different about it. I felt like there were a couple of reasonable things in there, but it could have been worse. So I can't, like, I feel like I can't give it a 1 out of 10, but it deserves it.
Yeah. In reference to your point about the news footage, the reason I very much thought that it was almost intentionally comic was like the next story they would do, like, you know, this dog steals a car or whatever that story was.
Yeah, and drives it into a building.
Or one that I actually laughed at was the first cutaway of when they're first describing Megan's missing. And then the other person that they're saying is missing, it was basically this, oh, and this very obviously black person is also missing, if you've seen them call. It's just a very, that was, I thought, almost a pointed commentary about lost white girl gets lots of press. Lost black child at the same time gets nothing.
That is mentioned by the director that he was trying to say something about that. God, also the reenactment.
That was tough. That was so stupid.
It was moments like that where, like, I felt like the film was commenting on the gratuitousness that goes into these culture and this media that's built around lost children and just make a fortune off just advertising and marketing their own material with respect to that.
Benet Ramsey.
Yes. And what was it? Nancy Grace.
I solved that one, by the way.
Was it Nancy?
Yeah, I solved the JonBenet Ramsey case last Christmas. Sorry to digress, everybody. Last Christmas, I watched like 6 JonBenet Ramsey documentaries over the break, and I've different podcasts. I'll talk about it, but I solved that one.
I was going to say, so Levi binges like Marvel movies, and you binge like JonBenet Ramsey.
Is how crazy I am. I had my family was over, or Sarah's family, my wife's family was over, and I came out and I was like, all right, guys, I have to go in the back. I'm researching the JonBenet Ramsey case.
How did they react?
It was just another thing that Lee does. Like, they was just kind of, okay, I guess that's what he's doing. And like, I spent like 2 straight days blowing through the documentaries, writing my notes. I got the whole case figured out.
Did you borrow some of your wife's yarn to like red yarn to like start connecting things?
The postcards on the wall.
The Homeland board.
Yes.
Yeah, the Always Sunny.
I'm gonna rate this movie. I'm gonna rate this movie.
What are you rating?
Yep.
8.5.
Out of what?
I give it 100? An 8.5. And here's why I give it an 8.5. Levi's giving me a big thumbs down. He thinks that I probably think it's just being hot takey for the reason, but I'm not. So I'm a huge horror movie guy. I love horror movies. And I like movies that are experiences. When I'm watching a horror movie, I like, the acting can be bad. Yeah, you can quibble about a lot of shit in this movie. All the things you guys are saying are completely fair. I've agreed with pretty much all of it. But it's still a movie that when I watched it made me minimize it on the screen because it was affecting me so much. So for that alone, it's an experience. It's a horror movie. It's an experience. It did scare me. It disturbed me. That's what I'm looking for in a horror movie. So yeah, I give it an 8.5. It absolutely worked. And the fact that they did it with people who never acted before, they did it in 8 days and they did it with $30,000 or whatever, really impressive to me. 8.5.
Also, the people didn't act much sense. I was going to IMDb's for a lot of the actors and actresses. They don't have really advanced careers. Perhaps this is a...
Yeah, I don't know if you guys heard me click, and I was like looking up what the actresses have done since.
Not much.
Not much.
I mean, some of the main ones had like a couple of movies that came out that year, basically, right. And then...
I think they're out of acting now.
Most of them had done most of like commercial or background work before, which is not surprising. Ooh. Because like, I mean, they were young. Both the main actresses were under 18 when they filmed this.
Yeah, like 15, I think, right?
I think the actress who played Megan was 15 and the actress who played Amy was 17. So they hadn't had much of a career as is. And actually, that's something I'm curious about what you guys think. So I was reading a couple critic reviews, because there were a few, and several of them accused the film of being intentionally gratuitous, and not with respect to violence, with respect to sexuality, and respect to using the younger cast as a kind of gratuitous kind of thing. Did you guys see or interpret it that way? Because it was not an uncommon view that there were they viewed it as a lot of unnecessary sexuality of underage people.
No, I mean that all tracks. I mean, it wasn't trying to say that it was good or that it was bad, just that it was, right? Mm-hmm. That sexuality exists, right? So I didn't see it as gratuitous. Now it was laced throughout the entire movie. But it's just, that's the story they're telling. So it would be inauthentic to not depict the fact that people hook up in high school. It's ridiculous. But
yeah, I mean, I really think that the last chunk of the movie was where the gratuity was. I mean, sure. I think everything else was, honestly, if anything, like, probably didn't go anywhere near far enough. And I think the choices that were made, at least for the beginning part of the movie, were relatively reasonable, but definitely not what goes on now. I mean, that was like big news stories where kids were like Snapchatting each other and like sexting and stuff like that. And it was a huge problem because it was all child porn because mm-hmm. they were all under 18. And so like 14-year-olds were getting like sex convictions, and it was a huge problem. And so the where this movie went with like the sexuality of the characters, while it was on, as an adult watching, it's unpleasant and disturbing. Like, gratuitous is not what I would have said about it.
No, it doesn't seem like it's trying to appeal to a baser instinct in its viewers with respect to that. It's not trying to frame it as titillating in any way. It's just trying, like you said, Levi, it's trying to frame it as is. What struck me, though, is that how many critics were commenting on that and then just kind of brushing over the violence at the end of the film. It's like, oh, and the last part of the film is really violent. It's like, man, we as a society are really, really emphasizing the wrong things if that's the kind of interpretation you get from this thing.
And like, as we sort of talked about before, like, the first chunk of the movie, I think, has a lot more to say.
Hmm.
And I think that to me, that's a, like, like, kids that age need to be able to talk about that. And sure. to like, somebody, you know, an adult, somebody with a little bit more power in this situation, rather than that being, oh, that's gratuitous, that doesn't happen. Like, holy shit, like, I can't believe you're saying that, because it does.
Right.
And why would you minimize it?
There was a scene of when Megan's telling, like, I think Megan's, they're testing out Amy's new camera, and Megan, like, volunteers to do an interview to start. And she is originally joking, but then she gets really serious. And it's a pretty affecting scene. It's a scene of where, once she stops for a second, I actually said, you should go hug her now. And Amy walks over and hugs the character. And that was a really true scene. So like you just said, BJ, that's the kind of story that a lot of people in that age group wouldn't be comfortable telling or wouldn't ever be willing to express, or like maybe some critics are saying here, would be quickly swept under the rug as being either made up or gratuitous or whatever else. But it's real and it's painful. And that's the kind of thing that people should be more comfortable coming out and talking about, or having a friend that they can express that with and get a hug from. So that was...
I'll give you a hug, Spencer.
What'd you say? No,
you give me a hug.
You wouldn't give me a hug. We've discussed this before.
Okay. Anything else? I think I like the movie a lot more than you guys did, obviously. But any closing
thoughts? 100%.
I mean, in comment on the reasons you liked the film, Lee, I fully understand. But my response would be, if a squirrel's going to get run over by a car in front of me, I'm going to turn away, and I don't care what kind of filmmaking went into filming that. It's just like, the fact that I flinch away from something doesn't give it credit.
Well, it does for me, because I watch a lot of horror movies, and like, I don't often flinch at horror movies. So it you know, gives a little street cred for me for actually kind of scaring me a little bit.
That's a question then, actually, to clarify. Were you flinching because you were scared, or it was scary, or because it was gross? Scared or scary, I think I would reasonably credit. If it's just gross, that's a different genre.
So I don't look away for gross. Like Human Centipede didn't look away. Like that, and that's pretty darn gross. Didn't look away. No, there were parts that legitimately did scare me.
Okay.
But I like being scared in movies. Like, I mean, I don't shy away from that. Like, that's when I'm watching a horror movie, I want that experience. And if I am scared, I let it play out. Like, I don't like hide it and pretend like I'm not. Like, so yeah, there were parts of it that kind of scared me. And I thought it was pretty affecting movie.
Well,
but again, I'm not trying to dispute anything said about the acting, the low budget, the news scenes were fucking ridiculous. But it's still, you know, if it's scary, if a horror movie scares me, I'm gonna rate it over an 8.
So when you say you were scared, because like, I think that some of this, at least in my mind, was horrifying, but not in the way that I feel like a horror movie is. I guess the sense of fear that I have is like, more that there are people out there that are gross like this and do things like this, not like like a personal fear, like sure. A fear of spiders, or I mean, there are And I probably do this to you, Levi, way too much, but like there are certain videos of people doing things from heights, like looking down, that make me uncomfortable, that I kind of like to watch because they make me uncomfortable. And
it's kind of the same thing. Kind of the same thing.
Like horror that I like. Yeah, I know I sent them to you too, but I think Levi reacts a little bit more.
Well, no, but I mean, what you're describing is like, you know, kind of in the same vein of how I like horror movies. Like I like it because I like that feeling of being like, whoa, shit, you know.
Right. And I guess I didn't get that from this. I got that's like a terrible thing to have seen rather than like something that I am sympathetic to, like rather than empathetic to. Like I'm watching it and it's just like, that's horrifying rather than like a sense of kinship to like what's happening in the movie.
Yeah. And I get your distinction. That makes a lot of sense to me that like to you, it maybe wasn't like scary, like, oh my God, like this is going to happen to me or like scared to be in your house or something like that. It's just like oh God, this is just tough to look at. For me, the scene of the photos, like I was not spoiled on that, which is kind of, so it was more affecting. Like I didn't know what was coming at all when the photos popped up. I didn't know that was a turning point in the movie, really, mm-hmm. when I first watched it, and did not know the barrel scene was going to come. So both of those really kind of like shook me.
Hold up. First watched it?
Yeah. Yeah, I've watched it twice. Well, I've watched it once all the way through, but there was some minimizing and stuff. And then I kind of did a, tried to refresh a little bit of it today. I didn't watch all of it though.
So you purchased it or rented it again or had the Blu-ray?
Rented it from YouTube twice.
Do you have a little like dungeon? Do you go down and watch it?
Should we buy you some rain barrels? Like, where are we going with
I this? Like scary movies. I'm in, and I like to you know, be ready for the pod with you guys.
And I'm right there with you in enjoying scary films. I would love if we did more horror films in the future because I very much enjoy being scared, or particularly enjoy thrillers where building tension, waiting for that trigger to pull. It's like the description Alfred Hitchcock said of the difference between like an action or horror and a thriller is that, you know, action horror is a bomb under the table and it explodes. Thriller is a bomb under the table and the characters know it, but it doesn't explode and they're waiting for it to explode. That I like. I like that building tension. I like that kind of even the sense of being unsettling. There were some scenes in this movie that were unsettling, mm-hmm. and a couple of them did that right. A lot of them didn't, though. There's various categories of unsettling in my mind. I'll give it credit for that. Yeah. I would not give it credit for being, at least for me, ever a scary film or ever that kind of scary horror, thriller horror that I like. There were some scenes that were effectively unsettling, and then there were a lot that were just gratuitous unsettling, but it never crossed the line outside of that for me.
Yeah, I guess for me, like I kind of blend unsettling and what I'm saying scary, I think I'm kind of talking about being unsettled. I'm kind of blending the two. I'm not parsing it quite as much as you are, but I do like that you enjoy horror movies. We should do more of them.
I adore horror films. I've always liked horror films. I liked horror films in a way my parents thought they needed to shelter me from, but quickly realized they didn't need to.
I just got accused of having a dungeon. I like them so much.
Do you? we didn't hear a no.
No dungeon on my part.
Okay. But you know, as a topic to discuss of, you know, joining the cultural milieu that has gone through this film, Lee, I do appreciate you recommending it, even though I didn't enjoy it.
So you're going to make it more than I thought I was going to get. So we can get your reactions.
Would you like to, you can't do live reactions for the film anymore. I've already watched it. If you guys had wanted me to do that, I would have done it. It would have been a lot of just, as Lee, as you've seen me watch films before, there were a lot of hand gestures.
Yeah. Spencer, this is something I really love / hate about watching a film with Spencer. If he doesn't like it, he is like, oh yeah, sure. Like you did that the Star Wars. It was like when Rise of Skywalker, Han Solo came on the screen. You like in a crowded movie theater, like, oh yeah, sure. But so, yes, Spencer. I guess I can research more of these like ridiculous horror movies that we can watch.
Well,
you bring up a good question. I'm curious. So Spencer, how did you watch this movie?
How did I watch this film? I had two laptops up. I was taking breaks from work to watch the film in like 20 or 30 minute chunks of where I would do a little bit of work. I'd watch the film for like 20 or 30 minutes. I'd take a couple notes of things that I wanted to discuss with you guys. And then I'd turn to work for a bit. I did that throughout the day. And there were certain parts of where I was so thoroughly annoyed with the initial party scene that it took me 8 times as long as it actually was to watch it. So I had to keep on, I kept on pausing, getting frustrated, go back to work, and then going back for a few minutes. I took a long time. Yes, a lot of that. I took a long time to get into the film, but once I went through like that official, that first 15 minutes, then I was able to watch it in like 30 minute chunks and keep coming back.
Okay. So you did laptop, presumably earbuds or headphones of some sort.
My Bose cancellation things.
So BJ did the same. Terry, I don't know how you initially watched it, but I definitely did a laptop and headphones because I got enough of a preview from you, Terry, about what I'd expect here that I didn't exactly want to play it on the TV and have Sam just sort of walk in and out. And she's like,
fair.
Going and doing a puzzle and like hearing that child being raped.
Mine was so funny with AirPods.
Yeah. So I was going to say, I watched it on my phone actually at work, like in between.
What are you doing? People? Like,
so glad somebody didn't walk behind you.
With somebody else. No, well, so I was in basically the back corner of a room, but it's
even creepier. But
it's almost appropriate that this has helped foster and develop and is part of what's called the computer screen film, of where it's now which they viewed as a genre of particularly found footage, but a genre of film. So the fact we all watched it on a computer screen, I feel is somewhat appropriate.
I didn't realize that.
Well, that was just purely because I didn't want to have it on the big screen.
Had your reasons.
Oh, that'd be a tough thing to explain. Okay, any closing thoughts on Megan is Missing?
I'm not surprised that it caught on for a TikTok reaction kind of scene. This is an ideal film for a kind of reaction watch for people who want to watch.
I agree.
There's a massive genre of YouTube videos and otherwise of just watching people react to things nowadays. And I can see why this very much caught on in that. Horror films or horror games are big in that genre, and this is catnip for that.
I love young kids like reacting to old music. I'm big into that.
That is the thing out there too, yeah.
Yeah, that's fun.
So what's the age of people that are watching this and then posting the reactions and like getting their cohort to do this?
15 to 23, I'd guess.
What is the average age of a TikTok user?
15 to 23, maybe.
I think it's 15. I think it's probably 15 to 23.
Because I watched some reaction videos on TikTok, you know, that folks were doing, like the real popular ones. And they were probably 19-year-old kids.
Mm-hmm. Or even for ones that are older, like there's a lot of reactors now that have gotten that are, you know, even up to our age or even older. But their primary audience base is 15 to 23, so that works in it as well too.
All right. Anything else before we wrap up? Megan is Missing.
I think we're good.
I think we're good. We'll see what's next. Are we? Is Mangum Watches going to be, you know, all horror?
I'd be fine. Other with that. Than
I'd be good with
squirrel
that.
Heist visit videos.
If anyone would like to, I mean, I'm happy to do a round robin. If each person just recommends a horror film and we come back to it, that'd be fun.
That'd be a lot of fun. Yeah. Well, either way, we'll be back with another pod at some point. Thanks everybody for listening to Mangum Watches. See ya.